Welcome to Ever Beyond on Free Thinking Radio. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Call in on 646-649-0866. That's 646-649-0866. Good evening and welcome to this evening's Ever Beyond show. I was going to have Rita Hayes as a consultant on Tantra and Ayahuasca. But she's been busy all week and has gone to sleep. So next week we'll have Rita Hayes on Ayahuasca and Tantra. And bring your friends. It should be quite an interesting show. So tonight I've decided to just keep going either have an open mic, or if anybody in any of the chat rooms here wants to discuss something with me, or ask for any direction regarding the seven rays or anything like that. I was I don't know exactly what I should talk about tonight. I've been waiting for the right inspiration, and perhaps that inspiration is a question that somebody has or an observation that somebody has. So until that time, I will discuss some of the weird things that I've seen this week. There's something definitely weird going on with the moon, or there has been. I'm not aware if everybody's seen it, but you can find it on YouTube. In fact, many of the things that I'll talk about can be researched just using the simple tools of search of YouTube or of Google. One of the things that happened was during about 3 months ago, during March, there was a moment when the moon was photographed on the 14th of March. Okay, now the moon, I don't know if everybody's aware, but let's just run through this. Moon has a 29-day cycle, and the cycle essentially divides into 4 one-week periods. The 7 days divide roughly 4, and just a tiny bit more. So every quarter of the moon, so you get the new moon, and then 7 days later it'll be a quarter full. 7 days later it'll be full. 7 days later it'll be three quarter. It'll be a quarter full again, and then back to the new moon. But in March, on the 14th of March this year, photographs were taken of the moon, and the moon was half full. 4 days later, 3 days later, the moon was full on March the 19th, March the 18th, in fact, which was my birthday, and I remember looking up at the very full moon. So the anomaly there is 3 days had been snipped out of the cycle. Somehow, the moon went from quarter full to full, and that process normally takes a week. So that's anomaly number one. Anomaly number two about the moon this year is that it appears to have moved, or it appears to have turned around, or sometimes it appears to be in the wrong place and then it seems to go right again. It's a very odd thing. Now, there is a certain tendency of thought that is going around at the moment that the moon is not a lump of stone, essentially. That essentially it's more like Darth Vader's Death Star than a planet, in fact. That it's actually a built thing, but very, very, very old, so it's rather battered. hence all the dents and the craters on the surface, but that it's still a kind of habitable kind of space, and that there's a how do I say, people who live inside it. There is a lot of speak about there being a port on the back of it, you know, like the drive port where the engine is, and that presumably blows out some sort of thing, and that the inhabitants are still kind of beetling around inside it. Now, I don't know. Who knows what that's about? But I have seen photographs where the moon is tilted up to 135 degrees away from the way that it normally is. Now, when we look at the moon, we see the face. Certainly here in Britain, when we look up at the moon, we see, like, you know, you can make out like it's two eyes and a mouth, and it looks like a face. With just a slight incline, just a slight attitude. And what we've been seeing is photographs where the moon has been rotated quite a lot round, which is, again, unusual. There are unusual things going on with the moon. Now, I have no answers to this, but I just want to point this out. Now, this evening... Oh, who's calling me at this time? Oh, I can't take that. Sorry, Ellie. I can't take a call just here. You have to use Skype. But the moon has an interesting history. And many people say that the moon was not here originally, and that it was later brought here because during a war, the original two moons that this planet had, which were presumably natural bodies, were destroyed, and that these two bodies kept the Earth in stabilization. And so the other moon, the moon that we have now, was brought here, driven here, by some group, presumably, to stabilize the Earth's seasons. Because they say without the moon, we wouldn't have seasons. So, I wonder what would happen if one day, one night, the moon disappeared. What would happen to time? Time as we knew it. For instance, if the leaving of the moon made the Earth rock up and down as well as rotate, we would no longer have what we call a day. Days wouldn't exist. We'd only be able to measure time in terms of the number of cycles around the sun that we did, because we could measure that just about as everything was moving. But basically, we'd be spinning around in space, and the sky would kind of spiral around, it would circle around above our heads in a rather kind of random way, which would put a stop to 9 to 5, to say the least. There's a lot of stuff that's keeping everything in this present equilibrium, but this equilibrium may not live forever, may not be a forever thing. Maybe this is just something that happens in the last 2,000-odd years, 2,500 years, and then something else may happen. Who knows? But the surface of this planet has been subject to an awful lot of trauma over the last few thousand years, 50,000 years, 60,000 years, I don't know exactly how much, but there's been a lot of activity, a lot of stuff flying around overhead, and a lot of it is debris from an ancient war. Now, this is this is like going into the realms of science fiction, but essentially the story of Star Wars is the story of our solar system, but a long time ago. Do the Vaders, do the Siths still exist? Are there still Jedi? We wonder. A lot of people have identified with Jedi, the idea of Jedi, that there is an invisible force which directs things, but that can also be directed. That's a very interesting thing, because that's also what they say about chi, which is the universal life force. Well, there you go. Good old George Lucas. He's he came up with a great name, and I think the force is a great possibility to move into a new philosophy that it's neither male nor female. It's not an authority. It's not authoritarian. It's not judgmental. It is as it is. It is the force. And that's more or less, as far as I'm concerned, close to the truth, because the force is chi, life energy, and it's divided into seven rays, seven colors, seven notes. It's the source of all vibration. And it is the thing that underlies all of our lives, or everything vibrates. Everything vibrates. That's the law of the universe. All is vibration. And here we are, sitting in vibrations. You're listening to the vibrations of my voice, vibrating a small golden diaphragm that's being converted into electrical pulses, which then gets chopped up into digital parcels. But I won't. I'm not going to go there. Anyway, so that's how it gets out. But it's still vibration. It starts out as vibration and ends up as vibration in your speakers or headphones. Each vibration has its own particular flavor. Now, in the last few shows on this station, we've been speaking with an amazing woman whose name is Shari Edwards. And if you listen to some of the replays that we've done over the last week, you'll hear them on the show, and you can also download them. If you come to everbeyond.info, everbeyond.info, you'll find yourself at a chat room. And you're at the Free Thinking Radio site, you can also click on the Ever Beyond banner that's on my page, and this will again take you to the site. And just below the chat room, you'll see a link says archive link or archives. And you'll be able to download or listen to any of the shows that have been played on Free Thinking Radio for the last month and a half. But just have a look at the Shari Edwards collection. It's great stuff. Anyway, so, no callers. Always nice. Excuse me. So, well, maybe I can play some music and find something to talk on. Do call me in the chat room if you have any ideas of what you want me to talk about. So, I'm just going to put this on. This is Janis Joplin and A Piece of My Heart.
Welcome to...
No, that...
Deep down in your heart, I guess you know that it ain't right. Now
Janis Joplin with A Piece of My Heart. It's been running through my head all week. Great song. And I've got to learn it by tomorrow. Those little nice twiddly bits on the guitar. Anyway. Meanwhile. So, yeah. So there was one more thing about the moon. And this is something that I found on Facebook just recently. I think if you Google, if you search on YouTube for something with the moon, and basically it's about a minute and a half of footage of the guy he recorded. He just pointed his camera on a nice tripod. You can see he's got a tripod, he pointed it at the moon and zoomed it right in. You can do that with a lot of modern digital video cameras, that you can, you know, you've got quite a good zoom, and it'll zoom all the way up to the moon, and more or less just about get to filling the frame with the moon. So that's great. I mean, that's a lovely the picture. So anyway, he's looking at this picture, and then he puts it on the TV and notices that on this little piece of footage, he sees these tiny little dots. And the dots appear and disappear, and they move slowly across the surface of the moon. From the edge, you see one coming up over the horizon and moving across. And how many? There's about five of them in this 1.5 minute piece of footage. So when I say that the moon's occupied, and you might think, oh, no, it's a dead planet, it's nothing. It's well, if you have a look at that, go to YouTube, go Something with the Moon, and look at this 1.5 minute piece of footage just taken by an average Joe guy who's got an average Joe camera, and he zoomed it into the moon, and you can see these amazing things. So, who knows what's up there? Who knows who's up there? I would bet my bottom dollar that something is up there. And that might also be the reason that we haven't gone back to the moon. Perhaps they told us, this is our patch, get off. Who knows? So, still no phone calls. Well, in that case, I'll perhaps only do half an hour tonight. Unless anybody can call in or ask a question, I don't think I've got any subject material to fill the show with. And I may just let the archive run. Also, actually, it's getting better, but I did have a rather bad migraine earlier and wasn't feeling very well. Meanwhile, back on the show. So, last few days we've had Shari Edwards, who's been speaking with us all, and it's been absolute pleasure. Shari has a depth of knowledge and a depth of understanding of the nature of the universe that very few people have, because she's measured it, and it all the mathematics works out, and she's discovered that mathematics and medicine and music are the same thing. In fact, astronomy is the same. It's all about circles, it's all about cycles, it's all about spirals, it's all about geometry. And each note has a geometric form, each note has a color, each note has a smell, each note has a quality. Each note has a metal. Everything has a frequency. And if you can find that frequency, you can change it. You could perhaps liquefy metal. You could try to find the right frequency. And, oh God, what's his name? There is a man who does that. He's, again, you can see him on YouTube, and I No, it wasn't a Mythbusters. It was an Australian documentary. And his name will come to me. Hutchinson. Yes, Professor Hutchinson. He looks like a kind of... He looks like a rock star. He looks a bit like Neil Young to me. And he lives in this tiny little regular kind of apartment block. But you can tell it's his because... You stand outside it, you see all these little, nice little cube kind of houses that people live in, little rectangles stacked on each other, and in one of these boxes, there's grey military equipment filling the little balcony outside with satellite dishes. He's even got an anti-aircraft gun strapped to the railing. Basically you can, he's got all these antennas outside. So when you go into his house, it's like walking into, the machine room inside a submarine. Every wall is filled with little equipments, little things with knobs and dials and big, you know, it's big steel stuff, you know, really proper military equipment. Probably most of it is like a submarine. But they have these radio frequency generators, high frequency generators that you can run through a amplifier and then into some kind of transducer that'll output the stuff like an aerial, but or you know, the equivalent of a loudspeaker. And he does amazing things with samples of material. And yes, he can liquefy metal by finding the right frequency. And he's tuning, just like a completely mad professor, tuning these knobs and suddenly this piece of metal starts melting. And it's not hot. That's the thing. It's not, the metal is not hot. It is melted, but it's not hot. You could put it into a plastic mold. It would form itself around the plastic mold, but it wouldn't melt the mold. He also makes things levitate with frequency. He does a lot of stuff with frequency. John Hutchinson is to the world what Shari Edwards is to medicine. So do have a look for a documentary on Professor Hutchinson and his experiments with radio frequencies. I'm not entirely sure if he's got the idea as Shari has, because Shari hasn't actually, we haven't actually spoken about the Templar material, but a lot of the basis of her medicine method, or methodology as they call it, is based on the methods of the Templars, and they had a lot of it down. They had a lot of understanding about the nature biochemistry and frequency and the relationship between them. Yes, indeed. I would indeed. So, I have a caller. I have Mr. Adelson. So, I will, I'll just... Oops, I'll connect that up in a second. And,
Hey!
Mark, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Good afternoon, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Two late birds in Britain. Actually, afternoon, it's 11:30 at night, but not for us, eh? What time did you... Mark works the late shift, so he's available for a lot of the American programs and has listened to an awful lot of them. How are you? Good evening.
I'm very well. Good evening. Hello, audience. Whoever you are, wherever you are listening.
There's a few anons sitting around. So, we want to talk about the moon?
Yeah, actually... I just want to say that another theory of the moon is it could even be a satellite.
How do you mean a satellite?
Well, going back to, I'll just say to the audience, I'm a truth junkie. Anything that's not the normal news I've seen, read, studied, you name it. So just to quote Alex Collier, I don't know if you've heard of Alex Collier.
Have I heard of Alex Collier already? Yes.
Ah, well, there you go.
Yeah. Well, we love Alex Collier. We love Alex Collier.
There may be some of the audience that hasn't, and he's a guy who's was in touch with the Andromedan race, and they told him just about everything there is to know about the Earth and the history of the Earth and the planetary systems, and his version or his truth of the Earth is that obviously it was inhabited, or we humans were brought there many eons ago, and it's been taken over and it's been colonized so many different times, which is why we have so many ruins and evidence of that. But his view on the moon is it was actually a satellite, an actual man-made or alien-made spaceship satellite, just like you mentioned before, like the Death Star, for the negative aliens to dwell on and cause their havoc here on Earth from their moon, as we call it, the moon. That's where they dwell inside and use it accordingly. So according to Alex, it's actually a satellite, it's a spaceship for the dark forces.
Yes, it's their getaway car, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And also another theory is that moon is a hologram as well, or when you can't see the moon, they use a really incredible hologram of the moon. So this is why people have seen the moon morph and move and change colors. Apparently, there's a very strong holographic technology that they can use to actually mimic the moon. So really what you're looking at is sometimes you see the real moon and sometimes you don't. You see an actual hologram, which is why people say, well, that's strange because the moon looks like it's morphing in and out. So this could explain the strange, you know, looks of the moon sometimes.
That's interesting. Now, here's the thing. I've heard somewhere, I don't know where I heard it, but I read or heard in a video somewhere that one day the moon won't be there. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Because if it is their getaway car, maybe they'll get away soon.
Well, this is a good theory. If it can be, you know, moved, and like you mentioned before, if there's sort of a mechanical way of it shifting and moving around, then, you know, that could be a possibility.
Yeah. Have you got radio going on in the background?
Not anymore.
Oh, your computer. Right, okay. So, that's very... So, it's very interesting, the moon. Ah, yes, Alex. So, yes, I'm aware of Alex Collier. The ancient studies that I've got come through Alex Collier and his teachings from the Andromedan people that he's connected with. And Robert Morningsky with the Terra Papers, TERRA,
mm-hmm.
And Zechariah Sitchin, and also Emmanuel Velikovsky.
Okay.
And hang on, there's one more. It's gone. Ancient histories. Oh, Michael Tesserian.
Right.
When you bring all of those teachings together, you get quite a comprehensive history about what has happened.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you're aware of, I know Project Camelot, they did an interview, I can't remember because I've seen thousands and thousands of interviews, but I think it was only going back about 3 months ago, so it's quite recent.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lady that Kerry was interviewing, and this lady used to work for the military going back in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And she was I can't remember her name, but she'll be in her 60s now, but she was sort of explaining that she was put under some sort of hypnosis by the military, not against her will, and was actually taken to the moon to do certain actual physical work on the moon, like moving boxes and just strange things. But she couldn't remember doing it until she was sort of put under regression. Now, what happened was she remembers being taken on board UFO, taken to the moon, and working in certain areas of the moon, you could say the dark side of the moon, alongside reptilian hybrid humans. So she was. She just remembers recalling years later, under regression, working, and certain people were picked and were put under this sort of hallucination and taken to the moon and doing work. And she remembers doing all this particular, just sort of moving things. It was quite a strange thing because I think her background was actual administration, something like that. But they why they picked her, she can't recall why, but she just remembers, again, through regression, being taken to the moon, strange areas of the moon. From what I gather, she said, you can actually breathe. You know, she was saying how amazed she was. She knew at certain points that she, when she looked outside of this particular military craft, she could see the Earth getting smaller and smaller and the moon getting bigger and bigger because she was being taken there. And she remembers actually being able to breathe, whether it was certain areas or whether she didn't recall, but she just remembers being able to physically breathe on the moon. So maybe it's, again, as we probably were aware, if anybody's seen documentaries of the moon landings, was actually fake. It was, believe it or not, there's evidence that our good director friend Stanley Kubrick actually filmed a lot of the filming. It's actually come to light, and a lot of his secrets have come out, and people have actually reiterated, yes, it was Stanley Kubrick. They actually commissioned him to film a lot of the fake stuff that was happening that obviously was supposed to be real in 1968, 69 on the telly, but it wasn't. It was complete fake.
Yeah, there's a very interesting corollary to that, is that one of the things that he couldn't quite get is the real kind of appearance of spaceness, of being in space on a low gravity thing. And you're going to love this. Do you know what they mean by a wire work in the movies?
I said expression.
Oh, well, I mean, it's basically it's a harness on very thin but incredibly strong wires, and they can pull you up, and so they can literally make you fly on a wire.
Yeah. Okay?
So it's possible to see the wire on some of these astronauts. Now, what they did, here's how they did it. They would have they had the film 2001: A Space Odyssey, and Kubrick did a very clever thing in that, and it has programmed us. Okay, here's the thing: he made the people in 2001, when they were in space and on the moon, he made them walk slowly. It made everything in slow motion. Okay? Now that is in our minds. We think, oh yes, I move through space. Everything is slow motion. But that's an illusion. If you actually look at the guys up in the Mir and up in the International Space Station, they kick the wall. They're on the other side of the capsule immediately. There's no slow motion there. And because there's no air friction, there's no gravity pull, there's no there's very little resistance. And so everything actually moves a lot faster in space. And so the big programming with 2001 is that we're all convinced that when you're in space, when you're on the moon, everything is in slow motion. But no, that's actually, it was a cinematic device that gave you the impression that you were in space or that these guys that you're looking at are in space, but they're actually slowed down by one and a half, a factor of one and a half. It's not double speed, but it's a factor of one and a half that looks just about realistic enough. And then what they did is, instead of you seeing that, that was then filmed with a TV camera, an early TV camera, which had a very few number of lines, very poor definition, very, very poor video, and then that was displayed on a screen, and that's what you saw on the television. So there were multiple levels of disguise of how they were doing this. But what we saw, that kind of really rough kind of video image, this is one small step for a man, you know, all that, that was all recorded in Shepperton Studios in London.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the same documentary I saw where...
Yes, it's Jay Widener.
Yeah, it was a fantastic. He just blew holes in the whole situation, you know, the even the fact that there's no wind on the moon and yet the flags were flying, you know, this, if people really stop and think and watch these documentaries and not just see it as entertainment but actually see it as truth, there's so much truth out there, especially on the internet. This is where I've got my knowledge. I mean, I'll be honest with you, not everything is 100% truth. But people say to me, oh yeah, YouTube, it's just an entertainment thing. I says, no, you have a look on YouTube. There's leaked secret NASA footage. There's leaked secret footage from military. You know, YouTube is not just for people jumping into swimming pools on skateboards. It has got some incredible, you know, documentary and a truth junkie like me. I've learned a lot about the world we live in from YouTube. I mean, it must be serious now because YouTube are starting to take off certain documentaries because they know it is the ultimate truth. You know, it's letting out what is actually happening. So, you know, for something to do that, then it must be, you know, making them a little bit nervous. People are going to start to learn what is going on, and there's, you know, thousands upon hundreds of thousands of documentaries, things that have been going on that people need to know about. And someone says to me, oh yeah, but you know YouTube, it's not truthful. I said to them, well look, you could look at 100 UFO footages and 90 of those footages of the UFO could be fake or could be CGI, but even if there's 10 that's real, then doesn't that strike questions in your mind? Well, if those 10 are real, there's something going on. So not everything is fake. You know, people that look at these things have got to believe, you know, it's not all fake. There are things out there, yes, that are reproduced or whatever, manipulated, but not all of it. So it's got to make people aware. And I think a lot of the awakening is due to the internet. It's waking people up because they're seeing over and over again footage that they can't always say, well, I don't really think that's fake. That looks real to me. Let's check out some more. And I think people are getting it now. They're getting to realize, yeah, it's what we've been living in, the false news that we get, that you know, that when you turn on the television, that is not reality. And I think a lot of the uprising that's been happening in these different countries that we've been seeing on the news, that they're trying to sort of, you know, show a little bit and then not show this and then show a little bit, is because they're realizing, you know, that there is truth out there and they're finding it.
Yes, and today was the end of the world.
Again?
The end of the world. News of the world.
That's
finally
correct.
Has closed down. Today, for the media, it's the end of the world. It's the beginning of the end for all of them, as far as being believed... trusted. Their trust has gone. You remember we used to trust policemen until they hit that guy, that Tomlinson guy, for no reason.
Yeah.
And now police are regarded as bully boys by a lot more people as ever was. We can't trust doctors because they're giving us fake vaccinations that make us ill. We can't trust lawyers because we know they're all corrupt. We can't trust judges because we know they're all pedos. We can't trust priests because we know they're all pedos.
Well, what the dark forces, as we know, the hidden hands and so on, with so many names for these creatures or whoever they are, it goes back to what David Icke says, and it's the house of cards. See, once you get a system where there's a problem in the system, or if you see it as a computer, you get a little virus or a little glitch in the system, it can take down the whole system. It can affect the whole system. And this is what's happening, I believe, with the Matrix system. The false Matrix system is that they've got a virus in their system, and it's starting to filter through their system, and it's going to bring it down. Now, you know, you can see, I'm a true believer in, it's not what people say, it's what people do. It's the actions of people that show their true character and their true meanings. Now, obviously, a lot of these things that are coming out, especially here in Britain with the News of the World, that they've been spying and listening to, victims of war and victims of this is a, I mean, people, it's like the shocker system. You know, in the past, you know, MPs have been caught, you know, messing around with their expenses and this, that and the other, and they go out in the news and they say, well, what do you think of this? And they always show like the positive side. But how can you see a positive side of an organization, a media company, listening to victims of murder, who've been murdered and killed in war, listening and erasing? So what's happening is they've stepped over that line with people's psyches, and people are saying, no, that this is disgusting, we won't take it anymore. And the house of cards is starting to come down, and this is probably what's meant by another awakening, and people sort of thinking, hang on a minute, you know, we shouldn't, you know, if they're doing that to celebrities, and they could be doing it to us. And this is what you're getting. People's minds are starting to now break through the matrix, and this is a good thing.
It's a very good thing. Are you aware of the Webbot?
I'm aware of the Webbot. I've heard good things about the Webbot. I personally don't know where it's getting its information from. You could maybe enlighten me a little bit more.
Right, okay. Well, the process is, this has been going on. This program has been running since about 1996-97. Right at the beginning of the very beginning of the internet. It's a guy, he's a computer programmer with a particular interest in languages. You know, an uber geek. And he's, you know, he's pretty old by now. He's in his 60s, I think. His name's Cliff High. That's his, not his real name, but that's what he calls himself. Anyway, so Cliff wrote this program which looks at the way that language is used when ordinary people communicate with each other. And what he means by ordinary people are people who use forums. You know, people who grow flowers, who grow particular kinds of flowers, they have forums on the net. Millions of them. Loads and loads of these forums. And what his program does is spider through these forums. And he's got what he calls a lexicon, which is a list of words. And every word has a emotional value. So, going from, zero, which is, like, ecstatically happy, all the way to kind of, to 20, say, which is terrified, okay? With, you know, at 10, it's like, mildly amused, and stuff like that. So, it basically assigns to every word that is in the lexicon a value of emotionality. Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
Okay, so then the whole thing gets aggregated, but the words that are used are also brought out into the context. So the words that come out of the out of the analysis, the context in which the words are used is also brought out. Lots of stuff is thrown away. But basically what he ends up with is a whole bunch of phrases with a particular value. Now, these values come out as a kind of three-dimensional plot. And so what he ends up with looking at is these three-dimensional maps. It's like a landscape map of data pertaining to word. And so these maps will show, in a visual sense, using color and shape and form, the emotional weather of the human race. And what he discovered is that to certain and greater and lesser degrees, humanity is psychic as a collective. And so by looking at this information, he can see what humanity is, for instance, being scared by or is in some way bracing itself for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, actually.
Okay, so that's how it works. And what he gets is a bunch of phrases that kind of occur clumped together. And he'll take those phrases and string them together in his reports that make sense. It's a bit like filling in a puzzle. Or, in fact, reading a language that doesn't have vowels in it.
Right.
Yeah? You fill in your own vowels. You know how it goes. That's how Hebrew works. Okay.
So it's a computer program with very, from what my research of what I've heard from, is very good accuracy. Seems to pinpoint even people's names. I've heard of the webbot mentioning certain people's names come up, and they've been influential in certain events as well.
Yes, personalities.
That's correct.
Personalities coming up, and there's one personality that came out, it was called Wild Colleen.
Exactly. And that's the person I was thinking of.
Yeah.
There's
also the dog poet. I believe I discovered dog poet because it calls it the Sirius poem. And I'll see if I can dig it out in a minute. I'll play some. It's actually, I quite like his music. He's a rap artist and he's called Sirius. The dog star.
So, all right.
Sirius, the dog star. He's a poet, he's a rap artist, and he may become influential. So far, he hasn't. But still.
So it's not 100% accurate, probably 99.9%.
Yeah, well, the stuff comes out. Here's the thing. He doesn't say it's 100% accurate or anywhere near it, because, mm-hmm. you know, they call it a rickety time machine. So that's that's their attitude towards it. It's like it's almost like fun, but it's coming up with some pretty serious results.
Mm.
One of the things that it came up with, which is where I was getting to, is that during this period we are going to be experiencing things called unknown energies from space. And one of the things that they discovered... recently there was a scientific discovery. A group discovered that carbon-14, which normally we have assumed for many years, decays at a constant rate, and that's how we do our dating. How we know how old something is by the amount of carbon-14 with it, and it's been a linear extrapolation. Oh my God, that's a long set of words. Basically, they draw a straight line between then and now and say, well, that's if it's like this then and it's like that now, then that's how old it is, because this is how fast, this is the slope of this line. But they discovered that it's not a slope. It's kind of more like a kind of heartbeat, because there are particles that seem to be emanating from the sun, which are probably neutrinos, but they find that it's connected in with sun cycles, and that at certain times within the sun cycle, the the carbon-14 will decay at a different rate than it does at the other time when the sun is in its other cycle. That's all they've found so far. It's got something to do with some sun cycle.
Right.
But that means that carbon-14 is not an accurate thing. The linear extrapolation, I'll say it again, linear extrapolation, that means taking a line, drawing it from one point to another point, and saying that all other points are going to be on that line. That obviously doesn't work, because we know that that reality is a fractal omniverse. You know, mm-hmm. It's multiple universes, and it's multiple fractals, and it goes on forever. But up and down. So, yeah, so that was the interesting discovery about things like that. That's right, and we're getting back to the webbot. And basically, the webbot has predicted this. And the other thing that is predicted for this year is the appearance of this term called alien wars. Have you heard of that?
Gosh, don't start me on that word.
Which one? War or alien? Yeah.
Well, I'm a believer as well in this matrix system that we live in. Obviously, the controllers use certain words to kind of brainwash us. You'll notice with MPs, they'll over and over again use words, whether negative or positive. But it's a mind control, because as we know, that the elite couldn't defeat us en masse, because there's too many of us. So their weapon against us was mind control, which obviously they use very extensively, whether subconsciously or consciously, and it's working well for them. But as you mentioned before, because of this change in DNA, sun, you know, it's all connected in kind of, it's hard to explain, but if you could say source, you know, everything comes from source or God or whatever you may call it. But to me, from my research of years and years of just taking in the positive and trying rejecting the negative, it seems to me that it is the mind control. Once we break that mind, that's what's causing the matrix so strong for the elite or the controllers. Once we break through, but it's, for some reason, we can't do it on our own will. It has to be done maybe through these cycles of the sun. So what I mean by that is, when you saw those images of all those thousands of people in Egypt who just literally came out into the streets, and it happened, I think, in Canada as well. And, you know, they're trying to suppress the truth, but you can't, because people are literally waking up, or their DNA is waking up, which is breaking the mind control in their minds. It's just the chains. It's like a physical chain in the mind. They're just saying, we want to be free. Where before, people were happy to say, okay, we're happy, you know, doing this every day and going to work. It was like a stuck on a wheel system. But I don't know whether you feel it, JP, or your audience feels it, but, you know, you just sort of think to yourself more and more, you know, I can't be stuck on this wheel anymore. I want to break free. And it's happening to people. It happened to me 10 years ago. I just wanted to break free and find out what the truth is. And people are doing it now, you know, and it's never too late.
I think you're right there. This is something, you know, I've felt like I've been in a huge empty town, just kind of wandering around on my own. It's like I've had the place to myself. There are very few other people here, you know. But now it feels like it's slowly being populated, and there are more people who are starting. Well, I mean, it's all because we're being squeezed out of the system. And those people who are flexible will be squeezed out, and people who are not flexible will necessarily be crushed. That's our choice, you know, to be flexible to say, well, I could possibly accept this reality, or to be inflexible, which says, my book says that this can't happen. You know what I'm saying? You know, people who suffer from religious dogma, we suffer from them as well, but people who suffer from religious dogma may not be able to accept the coming changes. Ah, and there's your phone. Your phone agrees with me.
Yeah, it goes off at the wrong times.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, again, research that I've done on religion and it, you know, not to offend anybody, but everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But it's this mind control, and I can see people when I go about my daily business, they're literally a soulless. Some people are just, they look soulless beings, robots. Mm. And it's because of they've been drawn into the mind control of the elite system that has been put upon everybody.
It's so sad to see. And in a way, you can see people that I, because you have, like, I mean, I have various friends on Facebook. They're at different levels. Some of them live on the other side of the world, but we're connected by common interests. Mm-hmm. And then there's people that I know that we're connected by various communities or various levels of friends. And so I see various levels and levels of, let's say, awake and aware. Mm-hmm. And certainly you see people with their issues. You know, there's a lot of people who are suffering death of a parent just now. Mm-hmm. We're all going through some kind of like a large mortar and pestle. It's kind of squishy, or a kind of large kind of mincing machine that is grinding up our personalities into the smallest possible particles. But it's all good. I mean, it's really good, because if, you know, you're flexible, and as that big pestle comes down, you just kind of allow yourself to be squashed by it, and then you come out the other side, you can build something new. I really think I'm not a man who is anti anything. You know, I'm not like an anti-Nazi. I could never get behind these anti-movements. Because I always think, you know, that doesn't work. And now I find that I very well agree with Buckminster Fuller. You know, you can't fix the system. You have to create a new one and allow the other one to fall apart. So that's where I'm at. And it's harmless. It doesn't hurt anybody.
Information overload. That's what I used to get a lot when I was and like I said to just to explain to the audience, I've spent 10 years just studying and learning what is going on. Is this a reality we live in? Is it you know, a lot of the films as I want to explain, a lot of the films have exposed the truth. So if these, you know, these dark forces are approached and says, and they say, well, we want to know the truth, their answer to it, well, we've tried to show you the truth in Hollywood films and so on. And if you really pay attention, you know, people have analyzed certain films and seen it's actually predicted certain events as well that have happened, like 9/11 and other events as well. So there have been little pointers. But again, it's like a subconscious way of telling us. It's not the full truth. You know, again, quoting another film, you know, we might not be able to handle the truth. But the truth is, that you've got to try and find it yourself and feel it. It's not just reading and watching, but sometimes you get that feeling or a resonance. And believe me, I've watched a lot of things, and I've seen a lot of you know, mistruths. Don't get me wrong, there are people who were put on this planet, or should I say programmed, to try and veer people away from the truth and give you little snippets of the truth, but then veer you away down the wrong path. And it's, again, it goes down to choice that you make. It's, if you can feel something that's right and eventually follow that through and think, yeah, that sounds right to me, or that resonates love. And it goes back again to what you mentioned before about Star Wars. That film is probably the closest to reality than anything, because, you know, as we know, there are definitely, from my research, there are people who literally are shape-shifting in front of your eyes, but you can't see it unless it's slowed down, but there's something going on there.
So you see, have you ever, I mean, you watch closed circuit TV screens as well, do you?
Well, I'm involved with security, so I see some very strange characters, but I don't deal in the CCTV side. I'm in more static security, so I've got a lot of time on my hands, which is hence why in the last 10 years I've been able to watch documentaries and learn about what is really going on. And believe me, what you see on the news, I just want to tell your audience, what you hear and see on the news is nothing compared to what is going on behind the curtain. And what is going on behind the curtain is coming down. That curtain is coming down. From my observations, is that the House of Cards could crack at any minute. It literally, and then, you know, I believe that the Matrix, or the net that is controlling, you know, the holographic side to, I mean, just for an example, people have looked in the sky and seen planes in the sky, and for some reason that plane is missing a wing. Now, how can a plane miss a wing 1 second and then suddenly come back another second? And all this footage is on YouTube. They've seen planes literally flying by, no sound. You know, we're talking about planes that are sort of only 1,000 feet in the air, no sound. You know, big jumbo jets. These are, they're even practicing holographic images, you know, to try and, obviously, maybe this Project Bluebeam has been thwarted because the chemtrails seem to be not staying in the air, because people are getting out what's called orgone. And anybody who doesn't know what orgone is, we could have another show about that. But orgone is a natural positive energy, which does, I believe, destroy anything negative. Yep. So what I'm saying is that the controllers, or whoever, the military, who were being also mind controlled by like the pyramid system, because it always goes into sort of a pyramid system, they're failing, they're not succeeding, they're failing. And and I think it's not just on a conscious level of people like you and me and thousands of other star children and thousands of other positive ETs. It is this coming together of, and I'll just literally go down to the brass tacks, it's a love vibration, a caring vibration, which does resonate tones, vibrations, even the word love, it resonates. To me, it boils down to good and bad in everyone and everything. So you've got good MPs who want to do well and who want the good of things, and you've got bad ones. And it's, again, it's the actions of people shows a lot of their intentions. You know, not always, but if you watch people's actions, their behavior, sometimes their mannerisms, it's not always the case, but a lot of times people who have got bad intentions, because we're waking up, we can actually see it now, and they can feel us seeing their negativity or seeing their lies. So what's happening is we are ascending. It's maybe not an instant thing, but it's a slow process. So what's happening is people are becoming aware. We can see through the bullshit more, and this is why the News of the World newspaper, they've gotten away with things for so long, but their bullshit doesn't ring with people anymore, and this is why they had to shut down. So literally, they got caught. A week later, they shut down. So this is how powerful we are. A lot of people, when they heard what was happening, that they were literally erasing innocent people's phone messages, listening into, you know, victims of murder and so on. This is terrible situation, but they got caught out and they shut down. So if that can happen to one system, which I believe is all a collective of systems, which is the Matrix, we can bring it down quite quickly. I believe it will. Again, it's the House of Cards. It will just, you know, it will just come down, and then we'll all be free, because all we want to be is free.
That's
the main goal. We feel, I don't care if somebody's a millionaire living in a mansion or whatever, they still feel, I truly believe, trapped in this system. You know, money will not put a smile on your face because it's material, it's three-dimensional. But what does put a smile on your face is when somebody smiles at you or says hello and shows compassion. So, you know, this is freedom to me. It's being able to show true emotions. And people, to me, are just holding back. But once this system comes down, then the truth will come. As the old saying says, it will set you free. Or set us all free.
I think it's a very interesting time that we're in, because all of these things that they said, one day this will happen, one day this will happen, this is, we're coming into the day, you know, it's not one day, you know, maybe one day something will happen, and then the next day will be another one day when something else will have happened. And I have to say that I'm having terrible trouble. I hope I'm transmitting still, because my Ubuntu computer is completely playing up, and I can't get to any of the files on it.
Have you got much time? Because I've got Orion coming through on the other line, and possibly Orion could. Shall we
bring in Orion Myers? Yes, let's bring in Orion. Let's see what he says. Where are we? Yes, I am still broadcasting. Yes. Oh, he's put me on hold. Okay. Yes. Yeah, it's very interesting to hook in with Mark. As you can hear, Mark is in the U of K, like I. He's about halfway down the island of Britain, in a place called Newcastle.
Hello.
There you are.
Yes, I don't know what happened there, but I think we're there. Can you hear me, Orion?
No, I'll bring him in.
Okay.
There we go. This should bring him in. So, we're talking to Orion Myers?
Yes, here I am.
Which one is it?
Oh, this is Orion.
Yeah, no, which is it? Myers, what?
Myers.
Myers. Hello, Orion Myers.
Hello, Brimmy.
You're on the air on Ever Beyond. It's
really?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just past midnight in UK time, and so it's Monday the Monday the 11th. It's 11 minutes past midnight. So here we are. And we've been talking about the moon, as we always do, the seven rays. And
it's about time.
Recently, we've been talking about the collapse of the system, and the universal awakening that seems to be happening on the planet.
Well, awesome. So, did you want me to comment on that?
Just to kind of give you a direction of where we are, so that you can kind of blend in with us.
Okay.
Just to know which way the stream is flowing. This stream.
Well,
of
that's
consciousness.
Always the question, isn't it?
Yeah. Which way is? I mean, I suppose it's always downhill. As the what is it? Who's that? Abraham Hicks. You know, it's always downhill. And what does downhill mean? It means towards the greater collection, isn't it? From the more rarefied, it gathers together.
Well, you could always say it's from one moment to the next. And if that's downhill or uphill, it depends on your orientation. It'll just be different.
Yeah, and who knows, gravity might be different too. So yeah. Yes, we were talking about, have you heard anything about the story that the moon may disappear one day?
Well, I haven't heard that story, but the moon appeared one day. I mean, the moon that we have wasn't our original moon.
Tell us.
It is. It's an artificial construct brought in by the reptilian races several million years ago. And it's, you know, been used for a lookout and a base and an operating sort of control paradigm. It's been like a fort to them. It's a place they can come in on the dark side of the moon without any kind of detection possible. And you know, the place is hollow, or it's actually got quarters and stuff on the inside of it. But it was, even the NASA scientists, this was many, this was, I think in the 80s, they exploded some stuff up there, and they found that the moon rang when they did that, and because it was hollow.
Yeah, I've heard about this. I've thought about this an awful lot. There is only one reason that the moon behaves the way that it does. You know the way the moon behaves?
Oh, you know, yeah.
That its orbit is its rotation.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all if you really try to compare it against other natural objects.
Yeah, but here's a mind experiment. Okay, you take a helium balloon, a good strong big pile of helium in it. Oh, somebody's typing. You take a helium balloon and tape a little magnet to the side of it, still so that the thing floats. And then you put a large magnet on the table, and then you walk around the table.
Mm-hmm.
What does the magnet? What does the balloon do?
That's a good question.
Just walk around it in your mind, and you see that the magnet will always be attracted to the big magnet.
Mm-hmm.
So as you walk around the table, the magnet pulls the balloon in orientation to the magnet. That's the same thing that I believe happens with the moon, because it's hollow, and there's a big thick lump on one side. Presumably that's where everything is, and that's what's attracted to our planet.
Well, I think it's actually got
Sorry, you got broken up. Say that again, Orion.
No, I'm quite sure the moon has its own propulsion system, and it just keeps itself tracked in a.
Well, as I was saying right at the beginning of the program, one of the things that I started with was the anomaly that happened in two anomalies that have happened this year. I don't know if you've heard about this one, but the moon appeared to be in the wrong place on the 14th of March, because by the 18th of March, on the 14th of March it was photographed at 4:15. And on the 18th of March, it was photographed as full, as it should have been. It can't go a whole quarter in 3 days. It takes seven mm-hmm. days to do a quarter. So something went weird there. It was moved in position, and it wasn't right. And then it was also recent that the moon kind of tipped over. It rotated, and then rotated back. And there was one more thing that happened today. Oh, yes, that's right. Mount Etna erupted. This is on planet Earth. Sorry to bring everybody down with a bump. Mount Etna, the volcano in Italy, exploded and went off. That was the one that was in the Doctor Who episode, by the way.
Mm.
Exploded, and everybody's time... Everybody lost 15 minutes of time.
Mm-hmm.
All the clocks, mechanical and digital, exactly 15 minutes of time. I'd say that was a big WTF hanging there. Any ideas?
Well, a large energy change will disrupt our space-time continuum. So we have sort of pulses that come off of large objects, and there's a sort of a pattern that they emit that other objects can sync to, and the combination of those actually creates a time fabric. And so if there's a large energy change in any of those masses, it will actually disrupt that time fabric and you know, disorient the time system.
Yeah, but anyway, never seen that one happen before. I mean, we had a bit of axis tilt recently, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't really been following that. I followed it a few months back, but I haven't seen what's been happening lately.
And the move, the planet moved 3 inches in the Chilean earthquake. Certainly doing some strange things. And that's what Cliff High said was going to happen. There would be changes in the world. Oh, are you familiar with Cliff High?
I haven't actually read any of his, you know.
Have you heard him on the radio?
With his name. Oh, yeah. No, I haven't heard any of his radio shows either, so.
Oh, right. He's most interesting.
Cliff High, didn't he do the, isn't he the designer of the WebBot?
That's the guy.
Yeah,
we were discussing that before. That the WebBot has predicted various things and energies from space and all sorts of stuff like that. All sorts of good stuff. So,
getting back to the moon for a little bit, there's a guy that wrote a book. I think it's called "Who Made the or How the Moon Was Made."
Hmm.
It's available on Amazon. David Icke references it in some of his stuff too. He'd run across it, and it sort of indicated rather big time to him.
Mm.
But there were a couple guys actually that wrote that book, and it's fairly scientific and stuff. I read a little bit of it, and I have to say it indicated to me. And one thing that's always, you know, just struck me about the moon is how you can have two objects rotating in space. The Earth's, you know, traveling some 25,000 miles an hour and rotates once every, 24 hours. And the face of the moon seems to stay synced to the Earth through some magical formula of nature. You know, it's in a natural sort of synchronous orbit, which doesn't usually happen. I don't think it's happened any other place.
Mm. Well, actually, we've got quite a few anomalies.
And, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's the Uranus, for instance, that rotates on its side.
The what?
Uranus.
Oh, okay.
Rotates on its side, like its axis is 90 degrees to all the other planets. And we all follow the polarity of the sun, you see.
That's the natural configuration.
Yeah, but Uranus is kind of spinning on its side. Venus is rotating the wrong way, orbiting the correct way, but rotating the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
According to Emmanuel Velikovsky, who did a lot of study of ancient astronomical data...
Oh, yeah, yeah, I read his early books.
You've read his book about called The Worlds in Collision.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the things he said is that the Earth used to rotate the other way.
Yeah.
And that one day, according to the Peruvians, the sun rose twice in one day.
Huh.
Once in the east and once in the west. And from thence on rose in the east.
And, yeah, well, that would make sense. That when you slowed it down and shifted its rotational direction.
All right, here's my theory. I don't think anyone else has got. All right, here's my personal theory. Is that ancient writing follows the direction of the sun.
How do you mean?
That, for instance, Hebrew, which was formulated in the time when the earth rotated the other way, goes from right to left.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And Sanskrit, same way. But modern languages, like English and Roman and Latin and Greek and these things, they go from left to right, as does the sun, if you look at it.
Yeah.
I think that's that's my theory on language, anyway. Because it's the natural rotation of things. And we feel that the natural rotation of things is clockwise to us. Because that's the way the clock goes. And even some people say that anti-clockwise is evil. It's sinister. Here, moving to the left. But what will happen?
Well, there's also the orientation. Like if you're looking east, you know, then what's on your right side? The south. And if you're facing west, what's on your right side? The north.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that orientation too. So you'd have to figure out how that plays into it.
Mm. Well, but generally, you'd build your home to face the sun, to take the energy from the sun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it would always go, you know, it would always go from one direction to the other. So.
Okay, yeah, if you set that orientation, then you have a stable point.
Yeah.
But.
So anyway, that's my little theory. That's my little theory.
Well, that's how I don't have any trouble lining up with that one.
Mm. So, here's the thing. Okay, the Hopi prophecies. You're aware of the Hopi prophecy?
Oh, some of them.
All right. Now, I find the Hopi prophecy a lot clearer than Revelations and all of those things.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
because the Hopi prophecies say, and this thing happened, and that thing happened, and this will happen, and that will happen, and this will look like that. And their use of metaphor was very, it was a very natural thing, you know. And one day the sky will be crisscrossed like cobwebs, and all of these things. And basically, they're pretty spot on describing this time. And one of these things is these star kachinas. Have you heard about the blue star kachina, the red star kachina, the twins? Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
All right, it's something I covered in a show a couple of weeks ago, actually. I read it out. It's a nice tribal music. It's really cool. It was basically saying that there's going to come what we would probably call today comets, bodies that come in the sky, that at a particular time, one of them will cause the Earth to rotate in its correct direction, according to the Hopi prophecy. So, just think, perhaps for the last 3,500 years or so, our Earth has been rotating the wrong way. That is not natural to it. And that perhaps we may encounter some kind of planetary object or some force from space. Some people say there's a gravity wave coming. Some people say it's a coronal mass ejection from the sun. Some people say it's some kind of comet. But anyway, something will pull the Earth and cause it to spin the other direction.
Well, I would have to say it seems like it's spinning the correct direction to me. at yeah. this time.
But that's because you're used to it. However, the world is evil, isn't it?
Well, now, yeah, that's another side of it, because the evil marauders that have, you know, infiltrated and are, you know, controlling this planet, they're energy vampires in a lot of ways. So I don't see them actually expending the energy that would be necessary to reverse the natural rotation, because the reason that they, you know, that they vampire energies, or that the, some of the techniques they use, they'll take the natural energies of an object and then they'll just pull energy off of it. But you know, they're actually reliant on the organic energies of the object itself, which, you know, and that energy comes from source. So I don't see the Earth, you know, I don't see all the energies that would be required to keep the Earth rotating for millions of years and so forth. I don't see that coming from any other place. I don't see them putting that in artificially.
Well, according to Velikovsky, it was a comet that came past.
Well, yeah, that's a nice theory, but you know, I don't happen to buy that one. I mean, I really liked a lot of what Velikovsky wrote about and said, but you know, that a comet reversed the spin of the Earth. I just don't get that one, and I don't see it as a valid reality. If a comet big enough to do that, you know, collided with the Earth or something, or, you know, it's just, there would be so much destruction. You know, we'd be looking at a very fragmented planet, I think. You could look at it like a baseball in space. If you threw a baseball, and there was a baseball hanging out in space someplace, and you threw a baseball and this other ball went past it, I mean, that thing would have to be going astronomically fast, or, you know, like 10 times the speed of light or whatever, before it would have very much effect on the rotation of that other object. I mean, it would create some turbulence and so forth, but to totally reverse the spin and maintain that spin, it's just a... I don't see that. I'd just have to, you know... I'd have to put my foot down on that one.
Well, how solid is the Earth to you?
Oh, how solid is it?
Yeah, I mean, is it hollow, or is it a big lump of iron that's spinning in space?
Well, I think that depends on what dimension you're looking at. If you're looking at this dimensional model here, then I think, you know, I've read the hollow Earth theories and some of those, you know, the ulterior hollow Earth, solid core, you know, molten core, and I don't have enough evidence to totally support the hollow Earth, although I'm sure that some of the planets probably are, and maybe the Earth is, but I just couldn't say for sure that it is or that it's not.
See, I'm just pulling the whole theory and reality thing together as much as I can, because for instance, if the Earth was hollow, it would mean it was much more buoyant, more light, much a lighter thing than we imagine.
Oh,
and
right,
if there was a cometary close call like that, that it would be able to be stopped in its tracks, because it's just, you know, it's this thing on a spindle.
Yeah, okay.
It's a hollow bauble, you know.
So how much force would a comet, you know, would a comet place, though?
Depends how big the comet was.
Okay.
You know, if the comet was the size of Venus, which is what Velikovsky is saying,
yeah,
then it's very interesting, actually. Let's just cross tracks to Venus for the moment, because according to Velikovsky, and I'm not too sure about this, but it's a very interesting fact anyway, is because of my son and where my ex-wife was, I had to travel to Cyprus, and when I was there, I went to visit the Temple of Aphrodite, which in the Greek is the name for Venus. And they said that Aphrodite landed in Cyprus on 3,500 years ago. That is the same time period that Velikovsky says that is the time of the Exodus, which was the story of what happens to a group of people when their planet is grazed by a comet. It's a very close call. It didn't make contact. But it was grazed. The atmospheres touched. And the gravitational pull of this object drew up water from the from the biggest ocean, which caused the sea level to drop by about 200 to 300 feet, and that's what revealed the land bridge that is at the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, and you can see that on Google Earth. It just take the ocean level to drop by a couple of hundred feet, and this thing would be dry.
Right.
So, all of these things were attributed to Yahweh or God, or all these things were a bunch of natural events. And the thing that we call nowadays nuclear winter was what they called the twilight of the gods, or the wilderness.
The natural events have been often confused in history for a huge magnitude of warfare or just
propaganda spin. You know, we see it nowadays. It's spin and propaganda. Oh, we did that. Yeah, they did that.
Well, you know, a lot of the propaganda that's in this society is that, you know, the Earth is, the inhabitants of Earth are pretty new. We've only been around for a few thousand years, and, you know, and we came out of a bunch of monkeys from the mud and stuff, and none of that stuff's true. I mean, this planet's way older, and it's had many generations of and eons of civilizations before the ones that we know.
Agreed.
But the most real recent, you know, major thing that happened was the fall of Atlantis, and that I mean, I have some memories from that time myself. I was a scientist in Atlantis, and there was a scare of, or basically a threat of being hit by a meteor or asteroid, and then that civilization had, you know, advanced technology by our standards. One of the technologies that was in Atlantis was commonly used for large cities were force fields, because it was the earlier civilizations were space-faring civilizations, and there were, you know, there have been interstellar wars in the sectors for many, many thousands of years. So, but there was a concern of, you know, being hit by an asteroid, and the Atlantean, that most of the Atlantean scientists were, you know, convinced that the shields would hold and all that stuff, and then everybody would be protected. And but I didn't actually buy into that. I saw that, you know, that might not be true. So I ended up taking a group of scientists. I said, look, you know, if that's true, great. You know, no harm, no foul. But I don't think it's. I think, you know, there is a good chance that it's not gonna hold like you think it will. So let me at least take some records of Atlantis, you know, the books of knowledge, and, you know, some of the temple guardian stuff of Atlantis, and you know, and take that to a secure place so that we can have a copy of their records, so we don't lose the civilization, just in case you guys are wrong.
A backup.
Yeah, a backup. And so I took a group of scientists with me, and And we found a place up, I think it's actually in Mount Ararat is the way I remember it, but we found a cave, and we, you know, we put the records and put the books and all that stuff in there. And, you know, and I waited, and it was a long time, actually. Nothing actually happened for quite a while. So, you know, I thought for a time that I may have just been foolish. but then what did happen was one of the races, actually, that the Atlanteans had been warring with got clever, and they pulled in a large asteroid, and they just tractor beamed it in on the primary island of Atlantis, or the continent. And the shields didn't hold. It's why you don't see any island of Atlantis anymore. There's, you know, you have theories about, you know, Atlantis disappearing in various ways, but the incident I remember was one where an asteroid was pulled in, and a rather large one, and it pushed, it devastated the whole continent, and that's where Atlantis went. But another bit of that story is, you know, after that happened, there was the deluge on Earth, and I mean, you know, we had the mass tidal waves and stuff that you would have, and most of the Earth was destroyed, but there were pockets of people that survived that. And I don't know if I want to get into the whole story, but well, I ended up isolated up there for quite some time, and then did start to involve myself with some of the surviving communities, which were actually from a different race.
This sounds like a very interesting subject, Orion. One that's actually quite close to my heart too. So, but the thing is, Mark wants to say something.
Oh, hi guys.
Hey Mark.
Yes. Hello, Orion.
Yes, I'm right here, Mark.
Oh, good. Yeah, I had my 2 cents worth. And been listening very closely there. And just to tell the audience that we're listening, Orion is a good friend of mine. We've known each other now for, it's going back a long time. It's too far back, I can remember. But Orion has similar views to myself, I'm sure, about the, just to come off the subject there, just about the constructs. Like we were talking, Orion, before you came on about the moon. And I mentioned about the moon, again, being the same agreement with you, of being a false construct, a satellite or even a spaceship, you could say, going back through evidence from Alex Collier. And Alex Collier, if anybody who's researched him, he's got a lot of facts and he can back up what he says. And this is the good thing about Orion as well, is that he can back up a lot of his information with facts, data, and this is the key to it, because there's a lot of misinformers out there, and people have to be careful of what they research and, you know, come back to people who really know, you know, what they're talking about. And Orion, to me, introduced me to a lady called Ashiana Dean, and Ashiana Dean, a lot of the information that she gives out, and she can be found on the internet through Kerry Cassidy as well, the Project Camelot. Ashiana Dean, her stuff is pretty solid. A lot of information there. Would you agree, Orion?
Yeah. Out of all the stuff I've studied, and this lifetime I started studying, you know, metaphysical stuff and, you know, just bizarre, strange things or out of the mainstream stuff. I started saying that when I was a kid, but the Ashiana Dean materials, out of all the stuff I've looked at, and it it's it holds up. I mean, I've looked at that stuff for hundreds of hours and you know, dissected it, and it holds up from all sides, from what I can see, and it actually, I find it's expansive as far as expanding your consciousness on just, it's like there, well, if you take the, you know, the an old phrase out of the Bible, know the truth and the truth shall set you free, well, that's just based on being exposed to the reality of what is and what actually does exist. And I find Ashiana Dean's, like, historical materials and stuff, they really resonate for a true picture of what we've been through, you know, for the last hundreds of millions of years. I mean, her history goes back, I think, about 4 billion, let's see, you know, 985 billion years or something like that. It's almost a trillion years. And anyway, there's so much material there, and just very specific points of data. And what's amazing is it all ties together. Either who put that material together is a grand storyteller and one that just resonates with my heart, or this stuff's just actually true, because you can't. You can't go back 4 trillion or, you know, four billion years or 100 billion years, and you can't verify anything from this point in time. So, but you can take the more recent events, and you can certainly look at that. And anyway, yeah, I would invite people to go out and look at there's a free online dictionary. It's called the Keylonic Science Dictionary. It's just Keylonic, K-E-Y-L-O-N-T-I-C, Keylonic Dictionary, and it's a, you have to get a membership to access the dictionary, but the membership's free. They just want your email address and, you know, to know who's looking at their stuff. So anyway, amazing people, though, amazing stuff, and I would invite anybody to go. Let's look up something like New World Order on it, you know, NWO, or look up Ascension on it, and you'll get a very detailed, fully scientifically delineated explanation of exactly what that is and exactly how that works, and your mouth will just drop open, and you'll look at the next entry and you'll go, wow, well, this is even more, and you know, it's like detailed out the same way you'd find a science book, you know, or a physics book details physics, except it actually goes beyond any physics book I've seen. It gets into detailing creation itself and how the different particles of creation manifest and what causes them to manifest and how, and the actual mechanics of manifestation. And then the descriptions of this particular 15-dimensional time matrix that we exist in, and all of the interconnections between those and how the the soul bodies and the, you know, 1736 I think incarnate, you know, soul connections work and your identities. And anyway, just interesting stuff to look at. I would invite anybody to do that and see where they end up after they take some of those materials in.
So, thank you for that, Orion. But back to the here and now. Yeah.
Okay.
We're in this process. You know, there are many manuals out there, and I just hope everybody's read whatever they needed to read, because I think it's time that we haven't got any more time to read manuals. We should know the stuff by now. We've had the practice. We've had all the different practices. We've had all the different relationships that we've had in our lives, and learning about how and who we are and where we're at and what we're supposed to be doing or what we love doing, and you know, that's what you're supposed to be doing. And once you're given freedom, because this is essentially what we're talking about, isn't it, Mark? Is we're talking about freedom. truth shall set you free. The freedom, I'm going to say it again, freedom is the will to power, which is, I need to do this, and so don't get in my way, because it'll be bad for your karma, and it'll probably be bad for your health too. Because that's what a divine, and you know, just imagine that every single person on this planet has a divine mission. You know, everybody's got a divine mission, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's what they love. And, you know, they say, to love is divine. It's really simple. Sounds like a, what they call it. Oh, God, I'm very bad with words at the moment. And all I can think of is the word palliative. And I know it's not that. Anyway. but the thread is, we are currently in the process of ascension. And it's happening right now.
Yeah,
more and more people are seeing things. Now, here's the thing. Here's a very interesting idea. What if all these people are saying, oh, it's very terrible that we're all being monitored and watched and all these cameras are on us, and it's very uncomfortable and very private. But what would the world do if somebody said, okay, right, you got 6 months, and in 6 months' time, everything will be different. But wouldn't it be nice to leave for ourselves, who will come back in the future, records of where we got to? Because every time we get to a particular level, something happens. You know, it's a dangerous place on the outside of this planet. That's why these people who live on the inside of the planet are so old, is because this stuff doesn't happen to them. So, what we need to focus on is, what can we do in the now to back up our world? Just in case. Just in case the memories that you have about Atlantis are relevant, Orion. And not just a story.
Oh, yeah, I don't think my Atlantean, you know, expose is just a story. When I ran into it, I was involved in Scientology, and I was doing a bunch of, you know, Scientology auditing, which is looking back at your, you know, through your past and stuff. And it just turned out, after I went through I spent a lot of time, you know, going through my current lifetime and trying to find everything I could find there and clean it all up and just expose it and look at it and see what actually happened. And pretty much towards the end of, after I had really looked at all of this lifetime and started, you know, basically got most of that cleaned up, these other memories started to kick in and I started remembering, you know, things back further than this lifetime. And that process, you know, one of the things that took place in there is I found, you know, I had found some patterns in this lifetime that just kept on happening. You know, they just would keep on happening and I was, of course, interested in seeing where that came from. And in one particular session, this Atlantean thing opened up, and I started looking at that. And when I got to the episode, I released, you know, a tremendous amount of energy that had been locked up for about 4,000 years. And you know, it was just it was an astronomical release of energy in that session. And it came from opening that area up and actually looking at all the things that happened. In the Atlantean thing, one of the things that had locked my energy up is after this deluge had taken place, you know, I was up, I'd literally been up in this cave for like, you know, 40 years or so, and I was lonely. So there was a village down, you know, down the mountain. And I went and made a deal with the chief, you know, and I took one of his daughters. And it was a strange deal because I was, you know, I had one body type and she had another body type. We were, you know, from totally different races. But I wanted a mate. So I, you know, I spent 7 years educating her into the ways of the books of power of Atlantis and the books of transformation. And because the Atlantean culture, you know, had the ability to transform material, transmute material. And so, you know, I tried to get her in a position where she, as I wanted her to be in my, you know, compatible with my form. And in the, and you know, so we went through this huge learning curve, and then finally, you know, we went through a ritualistic transformation process, and at the end of that process, she literally couldn't handle all the energy, and she blew apart, so it killed her. And it just drove me insane at that point. I became so sad and suicidal, and, you know, I became just crazy with grief. And, you know, and that grief actually didn't subside totally in my beingness until I went and finally looked at that whole incident and saw exactly what had happened. and the odd thing at the end of that, looking at the whole thing, that, you know, it's, I must have laughed for, you know, for a half hour, just, you know, uncontrollably, just to release all that energy. And so, yeah, I don't think that, you know, I think beings have the ability to remember at any point in their lineage, you know, their own track line. It's a matter of being interested in it and, you know, spending enough time to sort of sharpen your memory skills a little bit and just learn how to remember, you know, what happened a little bit longer ago. It's just a skill like anything else. It can be learned by anybody, or, you know.
Well, perhaps we should talk about that one day, because that would be a useful thing, and maybe something that people can take away with them, like a technique that will help them to remember who they are, to become who they really are, which, after all, is what we're after, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, we're trying to recover our natural beingness here on this planet. I mean, because we've been infiltrated and taken over and manipulated artificially for so long that you know, most people don't have a clue on who they really are. You know, they're, because they've got all the social programming and peer programming the reptilians have owned the money system and thus the printing presses on this planet for as long as we know. You know?
And again, we can talk about that another time. We've got 3 minutes to go, and it's been very interesting speaking with you, Orion Myers.
Thank you.
Same and to you. Yourself, Mark Adelson.
Thanks, Jay. Can I just finish with one quick thing?
Yeah, as long as it doesn't take more than 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll try and be quick. Another point here is there's three types of people. There's people who watch things happen. There's people who make things happen. And you've got people who just say, "What the hell happened?"
So, "What the hell just happened" was Ever Beyond. This is what you can expect from Ever Beyond. Let's have our little, and let's just bring in this really cool theme tune. Oh God, that's mad. The my machine is on a go slow. So let's bring that in. Can you hear that? You should be able to hear that, guys.
Yeah, I'm starting to be able to hear something.
Yes. And so, that was Ever Beyond with Orion Myers and Mark Adelson. Tune in Sunday evenings, 11 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. PST. Thank you for listening. See you next week.